Welcome to the Queen City Preachers Podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
And we're coming at you from Messiah Lutheran Church in Marquette, Michigan.
That is where we are.
On like a 60 degree and sunny day.
It's going to be warmer than that today.
Is it going to get warmer?
Yeah.
Praise be.
Yep. But it's been an interesting weather week, hasn't it?
It has been, for those of you in this neighborhood, it has been a roller coaster. We have had April, June. Yeah. It's just been back and forth. Like the weather has been weird.
Wet, dry. Yeah.
If you pulled out your winter coat some morning, we do not blame you. Yeah. It's part of the life. Mm-hmm.
And if you tuned into this podcast wondering, I wonder what the weather's like in Marquette, Michigan, you're welcome.
You're welcome because you know what? Part of it is we're sitting in an office with a big window, gazing out at the lovely landscape of a street, but mostly a blue sky, and enjoying it. So hopefully wherever you are, you're enjoying the scenery around you. So speaking of scenery, we're in Mark, and Mark has been traveling across some landscapes.
Yes, right? Last week we had the storm and the water, and now he's crossed over, and...
And actually, we're kind of crossing back because we've kind of...
Oh, yeah. He was in the Gerasenes,
right? Yep. So, like, we've gone from Jewish land. We're returning to Jewish lands after being with the Gentiles and the Gerasene. The lectionary just kind of graciously or strangely skips over the Gerasene demoniac. So you might remember...
I can deal with him this week.
Not this week. you might remember the man who's possessed and Jesus does an exorcism in a sense and... All the demons go into pigs. They die, you know. Kind of a wild story, and a really powerful one. But in this sense, we skip over this. We go from storms and calming the storm straight to the story that we arrive in today, which is the second part of chapter 5. So we're picking up in verse 21. Mm-hmm. We have two stories going on today. They get sandwiched.
Yes, and we're in this portion of Mark that is like very focused on healing stories and the kind of the mystery and power of Jesus.
Yeah, this section, often scholars are like, these stories altogether are Mark's way of describing the power of Jesus as, in some ways, Jesus is a divinity. Yep. Jesus is godness in this and who Jesus really is. So maybe think about that in the background as you hear this read and as we dive into it and wrestle with it a little bit, but these are some powerful stories.
Yes, so we're in Mark chapter 5, starting at verse 21 through verse 43. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue named Jairus came and, when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you? How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a girl restored to life and a woman healed in our little sandwich section.
And there's overlap, right? I mean, Mark weaves them together. Mm-hmm. So the woman was bleeding for 12 years. The girl's 12 years old. There's mm-hmm. there are these parallels going on in these stories. So Mark ties them together.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, the different things, the woman and becomes the daughter to Jesus, and the daughter of Jairus, you know, goes from dead to alive. And there's, you know, the lifeblood and the, you know, womb and all of that kind of stuff, too. They're kind of very much interconnected in lots and lots of different ways.
They are. They're both about restoration to life in some ways.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, so maybe let's start with one of these stories and then mm-hmm. and dive into the other one. So we'll start with Jairus since it's the first story. So a couple things to note about Jairus is that he's like in that time, he is a leader and the head of a household. Mm-hmm. So he is in a position of power and authority. And religious authority as well as familial authority, like mm-hmm. family authority. And yet he's the one who throws himself at the feet of Jesus.
Yeah. He's kind of breaking down that stereotype that we have in the Gospels that Jewish leader equals bad.
Right. He's totally mm-hmm. tearing that down. Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, mm-hmm. Jewish leader wants to connect with Jesus, needs Jesus's help.
Absolutely. Just like when we think to Nicodemus, who we talked about a few weeks ago, right? They're not all like, you know, they're not a straw man, right?
No,
they are these different people who have these positions of power, but they are humbled by their desperation and need. And I think that is the part that is so relatable to them, right? No matter who they are, right? We have this person who is this religious leader and who has power and authority. And then we have this like lowly woman who has been impure for 12 years, right?
Yeah.
But somehow each of them is relatable in their need for Jesus.
They both have a need, and they also believe, whether it's out of desperation or it's mm-hmm. it's that they truly believe in the sense that he's the Son of God and mm-hmm. and all of this. But that in their belief they have found themselves drawn to him.
Yeah. Absolutely. It makes me think tangent here. So like I'm a huge fan of the Bachelor franchise. And one of the things that they're always saying is like, who's here for the right reasons?
Oh.
And this past week they outed some men who were not here for the right reasons on the show.
Oh,
right?
Boy.
The right reasons being they are interested in having a relationship that leads to a proposal that leads to marriage of the person who is the bachelor or the bachelorette. Right. But some are not here for the right reasons.
Gotcha.
And, you know, they want to like be an influencer or, you know, create their platform or their business or whatever. Anyway, so, you know, the thing about this gospel text is that with Jesus, it's okay if you're not here for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's just that you showed up.
Yes, right? Your intentions don't have to be 100% pure. You can be questioning things. You can be desperate. You can be here, you know, as a religious authority and carrying all the baggage of that, and yet still show up and ask for Jesus, and Jesus will respond.
And the beautiful thing about this is that Jesus, you know, makes his way and to go, right? I mean, he's responding, but then he gets interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets interrupted by, I mean, you know, think about, I love this notion of holy interruptions, that like, that in the interruption there is also meaning and God is working in that space. And here Jesus's interruption is another healing, a restoring to life with this woman. And then as he continues, everybody else assumes that the interruption meant that the story's over.
Yeah.
And like, the reality is
that
he's like,
interruption caused the death of the little
girl.
Right.
Yeah. And whereas Jesus is like, no, mm-hmm. like you came with all your baggage, with all this, interruptions and all in my life. Like, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
That I'm going to show up.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a real underlining of this idea. I know, like, I'm a very, like, impatient person. And when I think things should happen, like, I want them to happen right away. Like, I don't have time to wait for it.
Jeez, I didn't know that about you. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey. So, but, like, it's, you know, it's Jesus isn't going to show up when we think it's the right time, you know?
And that's really a powerful statement of Mark to make, right? I mean, that in some ways this is right on the heels of the story of the storm, right? Where the disciples are thinking, Jesus, why the heck aren't you doing something? Yeah. And Jesus is like, guys, why aren't you just trusting that I'm already here?
Even though I'm taking a nap.
But like, I'm already here. I care for you.
Exactly. And it's breaking that boundary too, that like not even death can separate us from Jesus's plan for us.
Amen.
Yeah, right? That it's like that's the thing we as humans think is like the final like barrier. Like that's it. Like once that happens, there's like no hope, right?
Yeah.
So this would be a great funeral sermon text, right?
It is. And I think that like I think it was Buechner that made the comment that like that the funeral that he tied it to this text and said that like that the funeral moment is the moment where we are told get up. That life is beginning.
Yep.
Right? That death has occurred, but life is beginning for all of those who are grieving and witnessing that God is inviting us into something new.
Yeah, that death doesn't mean the absence of life.
Right.
Right.
And it doesn't make it easy.
No.
I mean, like by any means. But at the same time, that's a powerful vision to think about that this is this notion of life that there's a funeral sermon in here and that resurrection is what we're witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just of this girl, but a message to all of us of what does it mean to get up? Especially, I think about this too, the woman as at his feet trying to touch his, you know, just his cloak, his clothing. She's also able to then get up, right? Like she's been, you know, kind of down and not dead, but in many ways marginalized
dead.
And dead.
Pretty much dead.
And here Jesus is saying, no, no, it's okay.
Yep.
Get up.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Like...
She receives that new name.
She receives that blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And the little girl, right, too. Little girl get up. And the return to life, then now give her something to eat, right?
Right, which, by the way, if you think about this, you may remember our podcast or our conversation from back post-Easter, just a couple weeks, the text related to Jesus eating fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that eating is also proof that the person is alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in some ways, not a ghost. So Jesus is reminding them that she's alive. But in some ways, eating is also, I love this double-edgedness to this. Give her something to eat is also a reminder of eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you cared for yourself? Are you caring for her?
Mm-hmm.
Have you spent so much time grieving that you haven't even paid attention to these pieces?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now that's making me hungry.
Yeah. Well, Jesus and food go together.
Yeah.
So.
But I think one of the other important things to note within these texts is that while Jairus was somebody who had a lot of power and privilege, the daughter wouldn't have been. And so both
Absolutely.
The daughter and the hemorrhaging woman share this kind of marginalized kind of aspect about them where, you know, they carry not only that they are women in a culture, a patriarchal culture that doesn't really value women, but that the hemorrhaging woman, if we're kind of moving towards her, has this bleeding, right, hemorrhaging, and she's been bleeding for 12 years. And that not only makes life very difficult for her, right, with having to have gone through all these treatments and none of them work, and that being very demoralizing and painful, but but also painful that she's marginalized within the society because bleeding meant that, like, you couldn't interact with people, yeah. right? You couldn't touch people, that kind of stuff, because, right, she's unclean. And the little girl, in the same way, too, when she dies, her you're not supposed to touch dead body. And mm-hmm. so that becomes a point of not only marginalization in death, but also uncleanliness as well, too.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there are a couple other pieces to that, too. Like, the child in Greek is technon, which is an it, right? It's mm-hmm. not even gendered at that point. Like, there's no value.
Yeah.
And here Jesus is saying, little girl, mm-hmm. get up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he's calling her not just child, mm-hmm. but giving her value.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is really powerful because, I mean, he's reiterating what Jairus said, my little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jairus gives her value. The whole crowd is saying, you know, I mean, somebody says your daughter's dead. Then everybody's like, the child. And mm-hmm. he's like, the child's not dead. He's like, little girl, get up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think naming that in Greek and like seeing what Jesus does is powerful. I also think thinking about that she is his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the woman who's been hemorrhaging cannot, because we assume that this is probably 12 years of menstruation, which talk about, you know, blood loss, anemia, total mess. Things.
Oof.
But the other piece is that probably means that there's something going on that she cannot have kids,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that for her... That that in this healing, it's not just a we don't know, but it's Jesus acknowledging that you have been set apart in so many ways.
And when you say that with she can't have children, right? She can't have that normal means of a family.
Right.
And, I mean, we don't hear about her family either.
No.
But Jesus calls her daughter.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that breaking that boundary of that we hear often about in, you know, the way Christianity continues forward is that you become the family, right?
Right.
You become the family of Jesus. And so he's kind of, you know, it's recognizing too that she hasn't been able to have that. And now she is a part of a family and she's Jesus's family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we just had that text too, like, who was my mother?
Who's my mother? Yeah.
Yeah. These people are my mother and brothers.
Right. So we have family being continually being redefined,
mm-hmm.
but we also have Jesus placing value on those that society has said do not have value.
Yep.
And also Jesus acknowledging the value of that person, not just of their own life, but what that means in community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the life of this woman being restored is not just a physical restoration, it's a social restoration, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a communal restoration.
Yeah.
The daughter living is not just her living, it's a restoration of family, it's a restoration of community, it's a restoration of for Jairus, it's probably a restoration for the synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about a community leader loses a beloved child,
mm-hmm.
the whole community is grieving.
Yeah. Yeah.
That this is a much bigger picture than just a physical healing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about these texts in the idea of, you know, salvation too, of being yeah. made whole and of healing. And that really gets to the point of not only that they are stories about healing, but they are stories about being made whole, right? In that restoration to community and to life,
yeah.
right? And to having an abundant form of life, you know, where you're no longer on the margins or you're no longer dead, you know, whether it's literally or metaphorically.
Well, and to think too that it's not just those two that are touched, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jairus is saved. Jairus's wife is saved. The community's saved,
mm-hmm.
right? Like salvation
yeah.
is that Jesus meets us wherever we are and we're not left there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that's kind of one of the powerful messages of this is like
yeah. And the disciples
connect
too.
With us.
The
yeah.
disciples are saved because they learn about they learn more about who Jesus is. They get this revelation of Jesus that, you know, it's not just the intentional healings that Jesus does. It's all who touch Jesus are healed and who
yeah.
touch him in any way, you know, even the hem of his cloak, right? And the disciples are always worried about who's worthy to, like, come to Jesus or to
right.
be with Jesus,
right?
Absolutely. So it's also a lesson to them, like, even this woman who is bleeding, who is on the margins of society, is worthy to come into contact with Jesus and to receive healing from Jesus, you know?
Yeah. And I want to be clear here that healing, that there's some danger in these passages because you could interpret like, why haven't I been physically healed?
Or brought back from the dead.
Right. And I think that one of the things to think about is that healing has layers to it, right? And I think about people that I've interacted with, maybe you all have your own stories, but thinking that, remembering one conversation with someone who was dying and saying that I haven't been healed from my cancer, but I've been healed from my fear of cancer. And like healing doesn't necessarily mean it's what we want it to be. But healing in the eyes of God is restoration beyond what we necessarily can understand. That, and in some ways this passage speaks of that, right? Because it's about physical, it's about social, it's about communal, it's about spiritual. I mean, that salvation is totally holistic, as you were just saying. Like it's much broader than just one piece of this.
Yeah. Or even I was thinking last week with the storms, you know, Jesus doesn't have the power to control whether the storm happens or not, right? And in these situations, Jesus doesn't have the power to control whether the little girl is sick and dies or whether the woman has this disease that makes her hemorrhage. But Jesus does have the power to sort out what happens afterwards.
And that is present in the midst of it.
Uh-huh. And for us, that can look very different. I hear what you're saying about, too, that it's not like we pray to Jesus and then we get healed of all our ill, right? It's that sometimes we pray to Jesus when we're going through something and then the right person shows up in our life.
Right.
You know, it's
the right question is asked. Mm-hmm. A hug is given, right?
Yes.
If you're vaccinated,
like
no, I mean,
a
like,
meal
but
is
like,
brought. There's yeah. just that connection. It's not just physical, it's social. And
I would say that, you know, that the scientists and biologists and anthropologists, and they would say, well, the physical and the social go together, right? Like our bodies, I mean, in some ways, tune into Compassion Camp, folks, like for next week with your kids if they're participating.
Or if you're an adult and you just want to follow along. Yeah.
Follow along with the videos. It's great because in some ways this goes with some of the Compassion Camp thing, right? Like the part of who we are and who our whole bodies and all our needs work together in relationship with this. Like it's not like loving kindness, which is the Compassion Camp thing, camp theme, spoiler alert. But like at the same time, like that's bound to how we care for ourselves, how our bodies work, but also our needs and the needs of others that like, let's show. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because I think that's really cool. Like that, that this isn't, it's not parsing it out. It's about wholeness of being human.
And yeah, I think, so there's this line that it's not necessarily that Jesus's healing doesn't necessarily mean a cure.
Right.
But it means a hope of abundant life. And abundant life can come even when you're sick.
It's
you know?
Hope of abundant life and also hope of a hope that I'm not alone in this.
Yes.
Right.
And that means abundant life.
It means
right?
abundant life because you're with others. Mm-hmm. Alone is scarce, right? Scarcity is. And I'm not trying to like say if you're alone out there like that, that because you're not alone. But at the same time in this text, like it's acknowledging that the presence of God is a presence of abundance where all we can see is what isn't happening, what is broken, right? For 12 years, this woman could only see herself as marginalized, as on the edge, as broken, as how society viewed her.
And as finally, desperate for healing from all these doctors that offered nothing.
Nothing. And so you got to think about how depressed and how discouraged she must be. And here Jesus is saying, that's not who you are. Right? Daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, what does restoration look like? And sometimes, I mean, as you're pointing out, Pastor Molly, that like restoration is acknowledging that Jesus is present and that there is hope. In that presence, in what is possible in salvation, but also in with God. So,
amen.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, you may have noticed this text is packed with stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we dove into it, but like, I'm sure that you
there's
probably
still a
had
lot
some,
more.
You probably heard some other things in here, and there's mm-hmm. more that you could be wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope you do. We hope that we, you know, in the words of Hercule Poirot, tickle your gray cells, right, with a way of thinking about these texts, but also that that maybe that helps you wrestle with what these texts mean for mm-hmm. yourself and your life and your own understanding and how you see God
mm-hmm.
moving in your life, in your yeah. family, in your community, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. And wherever you find need this week too, I think
yeah.
that this is such a wonderful and rich passage that I think no matter what you're going through, like you can find a relational, you know, it can connect to you in that way that you're seeking that type of need as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would add, may you witness this in the interruptions too,
mm-hmm.
that especially right now, as we're returning or shifting to how life is all around us, that the interruptions or the things that we aren't expecting or are discouraged, but maybe discouraged by, that you allow yourself to witness God in all the spaces of life right now,
mm-hmm.
And to be present for that. It doesn't mean that everything is going to be happy or positive, but that you allow the space for God to be present with you in that, and that maybe some of those interruptions offer glimpses of grace and of hope and of healing.
Because mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're hearing some of in the story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. So yeah. So may that be for you this week,
mm-hmm.
A gift, God's presence and Christ's presence in the midst of all that, that mm-hmm. you might witness that restoration and that wholeness and that hope and abundance. So
yes. So wherever you are this week, we hope that speaks to you and you can hear that and that whatever type of weather you're having to speak to.
We won't talk about the weather next week. I'm going to try. So
it's just a good segue.
It's a great segue. And honestly, Mark, like there's landscapes in Mark. We're transitioning across seas and over hills and storms. And like
it's relevant.
It's there.
People.
It is.
Relevant.
It is. Yeah. But thanks for journeying with us. In these texts and wrestling with what they mean and listening to us wrestle and ramble.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right.
All right. So thanks for being with us this week, friends. You've been listening to the Queen City Preachers podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
Be well, friends. Theme song by the talented Eric Banner.